was sleeping peacefully. The fever had not lasted long. "There is much good in blue cornmeal," she smiled. "The Indians hold it sacred. And why not? On the day that we can get Lucas to eat a bowl of atole, then he shall be cured. Is that not sacred?" I agreed. "How long will it take?" I asked. "A day or two." "When we were in Tenorio's bar, you weren't afraid of him. And here, you were not afraid to enter where death lurks." "Are you afraid?" she asked in turn. She put her bowl aside and stared into my eyes. "No," I said. "Why?" "I don't know," I said. "I will tell you why," she smiled. "It is because good is always stronger than evil. Always remember that, Antonio. The smallest bit of good can stand against all the powers of evil in the world, and it will emerge triumphant. There is no need to fear men like Tenorio." I nodded. "And his daughters?" "They are women who long ago turned away from God," she answered. "And so they spend their time reading in the Black Book and practicing their evil deeds on poor, unsuspecting people. Instead of working, they spend their nights holding their black masses and dancing for the devil in the darkness of the river. But they are amateurs, Antonio." Ultima shook her head slowly. "They have no power like the power of a good curandera. In a few days, they will be wishing they had never sold their souls to the devil." The cry of hungry coyotes sounded outside. Their laughter cry sounded directly outside the small window of the room. I shivered. Their claws scratched at the adobe walls of the house. I looked anxiously at Ultima, but she held her hand up in a sign for me to listen. We waited, listening to the howling wind and the cries of the pack scratching at our wall. Then I heard it. It was the call of Ultima's owl.
"Hoo! Hoo!"
It shrieked into the wind, dove and pounced on the coyotes. Her sharp claws found flesh because the evil laughter of the coyotes changed to cries of pain. Ultima laughed. "Oh, those Trementina girls will be cut and bruised tomorrow," she said. "But I have much work to do." She spoke to herself now. She tucked me into the blankets and then burned more incense in the room. I huddled against the wall so I could see everything she did. I was tired now, but I couldn't sleep. The power of the doctors and the power of the church had failed to cure my uncle. Now everyone depended on Ultima's magic. Was it possible that there was more power in Ultima's magic than in the priest? My eyelids grew very heavy, but they would not close completely. Instead of sleep, I slipped into a deep stupor, my gaze fixed on my poor uncle, and I could not tear my glance away. I was aware of what happened in the room, but my senses did not seem to respond to commands. Instead, I remained in that waking dream. I saw Ultima make some medicine for my uncle, and when she forced it down his throat, and his face showed pain, my body too felt the pain. I could almost taste the oily, hot liquid. I saw his convulsions, and my body too was seized with aching cramps. I felt my body wet with sweat. I tried to call to Ultima, but there was no voice. I tried to move, but there was no movement. I suffered the spasms of pain my uncle suffered, and these alternated with feelings of elation and power. When the pain passed, a wave of energy seemed to sweep through my body. Still, I couldn't move, and I could not take my eyes from my uncle. I felt that somehow we were going through the same cure, but I could not explain it. I tried to pray, but no words filled my mind. Only the closeness I shared with my uncle remained. He was across the room from me, but our bodies did not seem separated by the distance. We dissolved into each other, and we shared a common struggle against the evil within, which fought to repulse Ultima's magic. Time ceased to exist. Ultima came and went. The moaning of the wind and the cries of the animals outside mixed into the thin smoke of incense and the fragrance of piñon wood burning on the stove. At one time, Ultima was gone a long time. She disappeared. I heard the owl singing outside, and I heard its whirling wings. I saw its wise face and fluttering wings at the window. Then, Ultima was by me. Her feet were wet with the clay earth of the valley. "The owl," I managed to mutter. "All is well," Ultima answered. She touched my forehead, and the terrible strain I felt seemed lifted from my shoulders. "There is no fever," Ultima whispered to me. "You are strong. The blood of the Lunas is very thick in you." Her hand was cool, like the fresh air of a summer night. My uncle groaned and thrashed about in his bed. "Good," Ultima said. "We have beaten the death spirit. Now, all that remains is to have him vomit the evil spirit." She went to the stove and prepared a fresh remedy. This one did not smell like the first one. It was more pungent. I saw her use vials of oil she had not used before, and I saw that some of the roots she used were fresh with wet earth. And for the first time, she seemed to sing her prayers instead of muttering them. When she had finished mixing her herbs, she let the small bowl simmer on the stove. Then she took from her black bag a large lump of fresh black clay. She turned off the kerosene lantern and lit a candle. Then she sat by the candlelight and sang as she worked the wet clay. She broke it in three pieces, and she worked each one carefully. For a long time she sat and molded the clay. When she was through, I saw that she had molded three dolls. They were lifelike, but I didn't recognize the likeness of the clay dolls as anyone I knew. Then she took the warm, melted wax from the candle and covered the clay dolls with it, so they took on the color of flesh. When they had cooled, she dressed the three dolls with scraps of cloth, which she took from her black bag. When she was done, she stood the three dolls around the light of the flickering candle, and I saw three women. Then Ultima spoke to the three women. "You have done evil," she sang, "but good is stronger than evil, and what you sought to do will undo you." She lifted the three dolls and held them to my sick uncle's mouth, and when he breathed on them, they seemed to squirm in her hands. I shuddered to see those clay dolls take life. Then she took three pins, and after dipping them into the new remedy on the stove, she stuck a pin into each doll. Then she put them away. She took the remaining remedy and made my uncle drink it. It must have been very strong medicine because he screamed as she forced it down. The strong smell filled the room, and even I felt the searing liquid. After that, I could rest. My eyelids closed, My stiff muscles relaxed, and I slid from my sitting position and snuggled down into my blankets. I felt Ultima's gentle hands covering me, and that is all I remember. I slept, and no dreams came. When I awoke, I was very weak and hungry. Ultima, I called. She came to my side and helped me sit up.
Ay, mi Antoñito, she teased. What a sleepy head you are. How do you feel?
Hungry, I said weakly.
I have a bowl of fresh atole waiting for you.
She grinned. She washed my hands and face with a damp cloth, and then she brought the basin for me to pee in while she finished preparing the hot cereal. The acrid smell of the dark yellow pea blended into the fragrance of the cereal. I felt better after I sat down again.
How is my Uncle Lucas? I asked.
He seemed to be sleeping peacefully. Before, he did not seem to breathe, but now his chest heaved with the breath of life and the pallor was gone from his face.
He will be well, Ultima said.
She handed me the bowl of blue atole. I ate, but I couldn't hold the food down at first. I gagged, and Ultima held a cloth before me, into which I vomited a poisonous green bile. My nose and eyes burned when I threw up, but I felt better.
Will I be all right?
I asked, as she cleaned away the mess.
Yes, she smiled.
She threw the dirty rags in a gunny sack at the far end of the room.
Try again, she said.
I did, and this time I didn't vomit. The atole and the bread were good. I ate and felt renewed. I asked before I had eaten.
Just rest, she said. Our work here is almost done.
It was at that moment that my uncle sat up in bed. It was a fearful sight and one I never want to see again. It was like seeing a dead person rise, for the white sheet was wet with sweat and it clung to his thin body. He screamed the tortured cry of an animal in pain.
Ay!
The cry tore through contorted lips that dripped with frothy saliva. His eyes opened wide in their dark pits and his thin skeletal arms flailed the air before him as if he were striking at the furies of hell. He cried in pain. Ultima was immediately at his side, holding him so that he would not tumble from the bed. His body convulsed with the spasms of a madman and his face contorted with pain.
Let the evil come out, Ultima cried in his ear.
Dios mío,
were his first words, and with those words the evil was wrenched from his interior. Green bile poured from his mouth, and finally he vomited a huge ball of hair. It fell to the floor, hot and steaming and wiggling like live snakes. It was his hair with which they had worked the evil.
Ay!
Ultima cried triumphantly, and with clean linen she swept up the evil living ball of hair.
This will be burned by the tree where the witches dance,
she sang, and swiftly put the evil load into the sack. She tied the sack securely, and then came back to my uncle. He was holding the side of the bed, his thin fingers clutching the wood tightly, as if he were afraid to slip back into the evil spell. He was very weak and sweating, but he was well. I could see in his eyes that he knew he was a man again, a man returned from a living hell. Ultima helped him lie down. She washed him and then fed him his first meal in weeks. He ate like a starved animal. He vomited once, but that was only because his stomach had been so empty and so sick. I could only watch from where I sat. After that, my uncle slept, and Ultima readied her things for departure. Our work was done. When she was ready, she went to the door and called my grandfather. "Your son lives, old man," she said. She undid her rolled sleeves and buttoned them. My grandfather bowed his head. "May I send word to those who wait?" he asked. "Of course," Ultima nodded. "We are ready to leave." "Pedro!" my grandfather called. Then my grandfather came into the room. He walked towards the bed, cautiously, as if he were not sure what to expect. Lucas moaned and opened his eyes. "Papa," he said. My grandfather gathered his son in his arms and cried. "Thanks be to God." Aunts and uncles and cousins began to fill the house, and there was a great deal of excitement. The story of the cure spread quickly through El Puerto. My uncles began to pour into the room to greet their brother. I looked at Ultima and knew that she wanted to get out of the commotion as quickly as possible. "Do not tire him too much at first," Ultima said. She looked at Lucas, who gazed around with curious but happy eyes. "Gracias por mi vida," he said to Ultima. Then all my uncles stood and said gracias. My grandfather stepped forward and handed Ultima the purse of silver, which was required by custom. "I can never repay you for returning my son from death," he said. Ultima took the purse. "Perhaps someday the men of El Puerto will save my life," she answered. "Come, Antonio," she motioned. She clutched her black bag and the gunny sack that had to be burned. We pressed through the curious, anxious crowd, and they parted to let us pass.
"La curandera!"
someone exclaimed. Some women bowed their heads, others made the sign of the cross.
"Es una mujer que no ha pecado,"
another whispered.
"Hechicera, bruja."
"No," one of my aunts contested the last word. She knelt by Ultima's path and touched the hem of her dress as she passed by.
"Es sin pecado,"
was the last I heard. Then we were outside. My uncle Pedro led us to his truck. He held the door open for Ultima and said, "Gracias." She nodded, and we got in. He started the truck and turned on the lights. The two headlights cut slices into the lonely night.
"Do you know the grove of trees where Lucas saw the brujas dance?"
Ultima asked.
"Sí," my uncle said. "Take us there,"
Ultima said. My uncle Pedro sighed and shrugged.
"You have performed a miracle," he said. "Were it not for that, I would not visit that cursed spot for all the money in the world."
The truck leaped forward. We crossed the ancient wooden bridge and turned right. The truck bounced along the cow path. On either side of us, the dark brush of the bosque closed in. Finally, we came to the end of the rutty trail. My uncle stopped the truck. We seemed swamped by the thick brush of the river. Strange bird cries cut into the swampy night air.
"We can go no farther," my uncle said. "The clearing of the witches is straight ahead."
Wait here, Ultima said. She shouldered the sack that contained all the dirty linen and the evil ball of hair. She disappeared into the thick brush.
Aye, what courage that old woman has, my uncle exclaimed.
I felt him shiver next to me, and I saw him make the sign of the cross to ward off the evil of this forsaken ground. Around us, the trees rose like giant skeletons. They had no green on them, but were bare and white.
Uncle? I asked. How long were we in the room with my Uncle Lucas?
3 days, he answered.
Do you feel well, Tony?
He rubbed my head. Next to Ultima, it seemed the first human contact I had felt in a long time.
Yes, I answered.
Up ahead, we saw a fire burst out. It was Ultima, burning the evil load of the sack exactly where the three witches had danced when my uncle saw them. A trace of the smell of sulfur touched the foul, damp air. Again, my uncle crossed himself.
We are indebted to her forever, he said, for saving the life of my brother. Aye, what courage to approach the evil place alone, he added.
The burst of flames in the bush died down and smoldered to ashes. We waited for Ultima. It was very quiet in the cab of the truck. There was a knock, and we were startled by Ultima's brown face at the window. She got in and said to my uncle,
Our work is done. Now, take us home, for we are tired and must sleep.
11.
Hey, Tony! Hello! Antonio for us!
A voice called. At first, I thought I was dreaming. I was fishing, and sitting on a rock, the sun beating on my back had made me sleepy. I had been thinking how Ultima's medicine had cured my uncle, and how he was well and could work again. I had been thinking how the medicine of the doctors and of the priest had failed. In my mind, I could not understand how the power of God could fail. But it had.
Tony!
The voice called again. I opened my eyes and peered into the green brush of the river. Silently, like a deer, the figure of Siko emerged. He was barefoot. He made no noise. He moved to the rock and squatted in front of me. I guess it was then that he decided to trust me with the secret of the golden carp.
Siko?
I said. He nodded his dark, freckled face.
Samuel told you about the golden carp, he said.
Yes,
I replied.
Have you ever fished for carp?
He asked.
Here? In the river? Or anywhere?
No.
I shook my head. I felt as if I was making a solemn oath.
Do you want to see the golden carp? He whispered.
I have hoped to see him all summer,
I said breathlessly.
Do you believe the golden carp? Is a god?
He asked. The commandment of the Lord said, Thou shalt have no other gods before me. I couldn't lie. I knew he would find the lie in my eyes if I did. But maybe there were other gods. Why had the power of God failed to cure my uncle?
I'm a Catholic, I stuttered. I can believe only in the God of the Church.
I looked down. I was sorry, because now he wouldn't take me to see the golden carp. For a long time, Sikwa did not speak.
At least you are truthful, Tony, he said.
He stood up. The quiet waters of the river washed gently southward.
We have never taken a non-believer to see him, he said solemnly.
But I want to believe, I looked up and pleaded. It's just that I have to believe in him.
I pointed across the river to where the cross of the church showed above the treetops.
Perhaps, he mused for a long time. Will you make an oath?
He asked.
Yes,
I answered.
But the commandment said, Thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain.
Swear by the cross of the church that you will never hunt or kill a carp.
He pointed to the cross. I had never sworn on the cross before. I knew that if you broke your oath, it was the biggest sin a man could commit because God was witness to the swearing on his name. But I would keep my promise. I would never break my oath.
I swear, I said. Come.
Sikwa was off, wading across the river. I followed. I had waded across the river many times, but I never felt an urgency like today. I was excited about seeing the magical golden carp.
The golden carp will be swimming down the creek today, Sikwa whispered.
We scrambled up the bank and through the thick brush. We climbed the steep hill to the town and headed towards the school. I never came up this street to go to school, and so the houses were not familiar to me. We paused at one place.
Do you know who lives there?
Sikwa pointed at a green arbor. There was a fence with green vines on it, and many trees. Every house in town had trees, but I had never seen a place so green. It was thick, like some of the jungles I saw in the movies in town.
No,
I said. We drew closer and peered through the dense curtain of green that surrounded a small adobe hut.
Narciso,
Sikwa whispered. Narciso had been on the bridge the night Lupito was murdered. He had tried to reason with the men. He had tried to save Lupito's life. He had been called drunk.
My father and my mother know him, I said.
I could not take my eyes from the garden that surrounded the small house. Every kind of fruit and vegetable I knew seemed to grow in the garden, and there was even more abundance here than on my uncle's farms.
I know, Sikwa said. They are from the llano. I have never seen such a place, I whispered.
Even the air of the garden was sweet to smell.
The garden of Narciso, Sikwa said with reverence, is envied by all. Would you like to taste its fruits?
We can't, I said. It was a sin to take anything without permission.
Narciso is my friend, Sikwa said.
He reached through the green wall, and a secret latch opened an ivy-laden door. We walked into the garden. Sikwa closed the door behind him and said,
Narciso is in jail. The sheriff found him drunk.
I was fascinated by the garden. I forgot about seeing the golden carp. The air was cool and clear, not dusty and hot like the street. Somewhere, I heard the sound of gurgling water.
Somewhere here there's a spring, Sikwa said. I don't know where. That's what makes the garden so green. That, and the magic of Narciso. I was bewildered by the garden. Everywhere I looked, there were fruit-laden trees and rows of vegetables. I knew the earth was fruitful because I had seen my uncles make it bear in abundance, but I never realized it could be like this.
The ground was soft to walk on. The fragrance of sun-dazzling flowers was deep and soft and beautiful.
The Garden of Narciso,
I whispered.
Narciso is my friend, Siko intoned.
He pulled some carrots from the soft, dark earth, and we sat down to eat.
I cannot, I said.
It was silent and peaceful in the garden. I felt that someone was watching us.
It's all right, Siko said.
And although I did not feel good about it, I ate the golden carrot. I had never eaten anything sweeter or juicier in my life.
Why does Narciso drink?
I asked.
To forget, Siko answered.
Does he know about the golden carp?
I asked.
The magic people all know about the coming day of the golden carp, Siko answered.
His bright eyes twinkled.
Do you know how Narciso plants?
He asked.
No,
I answered. I had always thought farmers were sober men. I couldn't imagine a drunk man planting and reaping such fruits.
By the light of the moon, Siko whispered. Like my uncles, the Lunas.
In the spring, Narciso gets drunk, Siko continued. He stays drunk until the bad blood of spring is washed away. Then, the moon of planting comes over the elm trees and shines on the hoard of last year's seeds. It is then that he gathers the seeds and plants. He dances as he plants, and he sings. He scatters the seeds by moonlight, and they fall and grow. The garden is like Narciso. It is drunk.
My father knows Narciso, I said. The story Siko had told me was fascinating. It seemed that the more I knew about people, the more I knew about the strange magic hidden in their hearts.
In this town, everybody knows everybody, Siko said.
Do you know everyone?
I asked.
Uh-huh,
he nodded.
You know Hassan's Indian?
Yes.
Do you know Ultima?
I asked.
I know about her cure, he said. It was good.
Come on now, let's be on our way. The golden carp will be swimming soon.
We slipped out of the coolness of the garden into the hot, dusty street. On the east side of the school building was a barren playground with a basketball goal. The gang was playing basketball in the hot sun.
Does the gang know about the golden carp?
I asked as we approached the group.
Only Samuel, Siko said. Only Samuel can be trusted.
Why do you trust me?
I asked. He paused and looked at me.
Because you're a fisherman, he said. There are no rules on who we trust, Tony. There's just a feeling. The Indian told Samuel the story. Narciso told me. Now we tell you. I have a feeling someone, maybe Ultima, would have told you. We all share...
Hey! Ernie called. You guys want to play?
They ran towards us.
Nah,
Siko said. He turned away. He did not face them.
Hi, Tony,
they greeted me.
Hey, you guys headed for Blue Lake? Let's go swimming,
Florence suggested.
It's too hot to play,
Horse griped. He was dripping with sweat.
Hey, Tony, is it true what they say? Is there a bruja at your house?
Ernie asked.
A bruja? Chingada! A la beca!
No,
I said simply.
My father said she cursed someone, and 3 days later, that person changed into a frog. Hey, is it the old lady that goes to church with your family?
Bones shrieked.
Let's go,
Siko said.
Knock it off, you guys. Are we going to play ball or not?
Red pleaded. Ernie spun the basketball on his finger. He was standing close to me and grinning as the ball spun.
Hey, Tony, can you make the ball disappear?
He laughed. The others laughed, too.
Hey, Tony, do some magic.
Horse threw a hold around my neck and locked me into his half Nelson.
Yeah,
Ernie shouted in my face. I did not know why he hated me.
Leave him alone, Horse,
Red said.
Stay out of it, Red,
Ernie shouted.
You're a Protestant. You don't know about the brujas.
They turn to owls and fly at night, Abel shouted.
You have to kill them with a bullet marked with a cross,
Lloyd added.
It's the law.
Do magic,
Horse grunted in my ear. His half Nelson was tight now. My stomach felt sick.
Voodoo,
Ernie spun the ball in my face.
Okay,
I cried. I must have scared Horse because he let loose and jumped back. They were all still, watching me. The heat and what I had heard made me sick. I bent over, retched, and vomited. The yellow froth and juice of the carrots splattered at their feet.
Jesus Christ! Chingada! Puta! A la madre!
Come on, Siko said. We took advantage of their surprise and ran. We were over the hill, past the last few houses, and at Blue Lake before they recovered from the astonishment I saw in their faces. We stopped to rest and laugh.
That was great, Tony, Siko gasped. That really put Ernie in his place.
Yeah, I nodded. I felt better after vomiting and running. I felt better about taking the carrots, but I didn't feel good about what they had said about Ultima.
Why are they like that?
I asked Sequel. We skirted Blue Lake and worked our way through the tall golden grass to the creek.
I don't know, Sequel answered, except that people, grown-ups and kids, seem to want to hurt each other. And it's worse when they're in a group.
We walked on in silence. I had never been this far before, so the land interested me. I knew that the waters of El Rito flowed from springs in the dark hills. I knew that those hills cradled the mysterious hidden lakes, but I had never been there. The creek flowed around the town, crossed beneath the bridge to El Puerto, then turned towards the river. There was a small reservoir there, and where the water emptied into the river, the watercress grew thick and green. Ultima and I had visited the place in search of roots and herbs. The water of El Rito was clear and clean. It was not muddy like the water of the river. We followed the footpath along the creek until we came to a thicket of brush and trees. The trail skirted around the bosque. Siko paused and looked around. He pretended to be removing a splinter from his foot, but he was cautiously scanning the trail and the grass around us. I was sure we were alone. The last people we had seen were the swimmers at the Blue Lake a few miles back. Siko pointed to the path. The fishermen follow the trail around the brush, he whispered. They hit the creek again, just below the pond that's hidden in here. He squirmed into the thicket on hands and knees, and I followed. After a while, we could stand up again and follow the creek to a place where an old beaver dam made a large pond. It was a beautiful spot. The pond was dark and clear, and the water trickled and gurgled over the top of the dam. There was plenty of grass along the bank, and on all sides the tall brush and trees rose to shut off the world. Siko pointed. The golden carp will come through there. The cool waters of the creek came out of a dark, shadowy grotto of overhanging thicket. then flowed about 30 feet before they entered the large pond. Siko reached into a clump of grass and brought out a long, thin salt cedar branch with a spear at the end. The razor-sharp steel glistened in the sun. The other end of the spear had a nylon cord attached to it for retrieving. "I fish for the black bass of the pond," Siko said. He took a position on a high clump of grass at the edge of the bank and motioned for me to sit by the bank, but away from him. "How can you see him?" I asked. The waters of the pool were clear and pure, but dark from their depth and shadows of the surrounding brush. The sun was crystalline white in the clear blue sky, but still there was the darkness of shadows in this sacred spot. "The golden carp will scare him up," Siko whispered. "The black bass thinks he can be king of the fish, but all he wants is to eat them. The black bass is a killer, but the real king is the golden carp, Tony. He doesn't eat his own kind." Siko's eyes remained glued on the dark waters. His body was motionless, like a spring awaiting release. We had been whispering since we arrived at the pond. Why, I didn't know, except that it was just one of those places where one can communicate only in whispers, like church. We sat for a long time, waiting for the golden carp. It was very pleasant to sit in the warm sunshine and watch the pure waters drift by. The drone of the summer insects and grasshoppers made me sleepy. The lush green of the grass was cool, and beneath the grass was the dark earth, patient, waiting. To the northeast, two hawks circled endlessly in the clear sky. There must be something dead on the road to Tucumcari, I thought. Then, the golden carp came. Siko pointed, and I turned to where the stream came out of the dark grotto of overhanging tree branches. At first, I thought I must be dreaming. I had expected to see a carp the size of a river carp, perhaps a little bigger and slightly orange instead of brown. I rubbed my eyes and watched in astonishment. "Behold, the golden carp, lord of the waters." I turned and saw Siko standing, his spear held across his chest as if in acknowledgement of the presence of a ruler. The huge, beautiful form glided through the blue waters. I could not believe its size. It was bigger than me, and bright orange. The sunlight glistened off his golden scales. He glided down the creek with a couple of small carp following, but they were like minnows compared to him. "The golden carp," I whispered in awe. I could not have been more entranced if I had seen the Virgin or God himself. The golden carp had seen me. It made a wide sweep, its back making ripples in the dark water. I could have reached out into the water and touched the holy fish. "He knows you are a friend," Siko whispered. Then, the golden carp swam by Siko and disappeared into the darkness of the pond. I felt my body trembling as I saw the bright golden form disappear. I knew I had witnessed a miraculous thing, the appearance of a pagan god, a thing as miraculous as the curing of my Uncle Lucas, and I thought the power of God failed where Ultimas worked. And then, a sudden illumination of beauty and understanding flashed through my mind. This is what I had expected God to do at my first Holy Communion. If God was witness to my beholding of the golden carp, then I had sinned. I clasped my hands and was about to pray to the heavens when the waters of the pond exploded. I turned in time to see Siko hurl his spear at the monstrous black bass that had broken the surface of the waters. The evil mouth of the black bass was open and red. Its eyes were glazed with hate
as it hung in the air surrounded by churning water and a million diamond droplets of water. The spear whistled through the air, but the aim was low. The huge tail swished and contemptuously flipped it aside. Then the black form dropped into the foaming waters.
"Missed," Siko groaned. He retrieved his line slowly.
I nodded my head.
"I can't believe what I've seen," I heard myself say. "Are all the fish that big here?"
"No," Siko smiled. "They catch 2 and 3 pounders below the beaver dam. The black bass must weigh close to 20. He threw his spear and line behind the clump of grass and came to sit by me.
"Come on, let's put our feet in the water. The golden carp will be returning."
"Are you sorry you missed?" I asked as we slid our feet into the cool water.
"No," Siko said. "It's just a game."
The orange of the golden carp appeared at the edge of the pond. As he came out of the darkness of the pond, the sun caught his shiny scales, and the light reflected orange and yellow and red. He swam very close to our feet. His body was round and smooth in the clear water. We watched in silence at the beauty and grandeur of the great fish. Out of the corner of my eyes, I saw Siko hold his hand to his breast as the golden carp glided by. Then, with a switch of his powerful tail, the golden carp disappeared into the shadowy water under the thicket. I shook my head.
"What'll happen to the golden carp?"
"What do you mean?" Siko asked.
"There are many men who fish here."
Siko smiled.
"They can't see him, Tony. They can't see him. I know every man from Guadalupe who fishes, and there ain't a one who has ever mentioned seeing the golden carp. So I guess the grown-ups can't see him."
"The Indian, Narciso, Ultima?"
"They're different, Tony. Like Samuel, and me, and you."
"I see," I said. I didn't know what the difference was, but I did feel a strange brotherhood with Siko. We shared a secret that would always bind us.
"Where does the golden carp go?"
I asked, and nodded upstream.
"He swims upstream to the lakes of the mermaid, the hidden lakes."
"The mermaid?" I questioned him.
"There are 2 deep hidden lakes up in the hills," he continued. "They feed the creek. Some people say those lakes have no bottom. There's good fishing, but very few people go there.
There's something strange about those lakes, like they're haunted. There's a strange power. It seems to watch you."
"Like the presence of the river?"
I asked softly. Siko looked at me and nodded.
"You felt it," he said.
"Yes."
"Then you understand. But this thing at the lakes is stronger, or maybe not stronger. It just seems to want you more. The time I was there, I climbed to one of the overhanging cliffs, and I just sat there watching the fish in the clear water. I didn't know about the power then. I was just thinking how good the fishing would be, when I began to hear strange music. It came from far away. It was a low, lonely murmuring, maybe like something a sad girl would sing. I looked around, but I was alone. I looked over the ledge of the cliff, and the singing seemed to be coming from the water, and it seemed to be calling me."
I was spellbound with Siko's whispered story.
If I hadn't seen the golden carp, perhaps I would not have believed him. But I had seen too much today to doubt him.
I swear, Tony, the music was pulling me into the dark waters below. The only thing that saved me from plunging into the lake was the golden carp. He appeared, and the music stopped. Only then could I tear myself away from that place. Man, I ran. Oh, how I ran. I had never been afraid before, but I was afraid then. And it wasn't that the singing was evil. It was just that it called for me to join it. One more step, and I'd have stepped over the ledge and drowned in the waters of the lake. I waited a long time before I asked the next question. I waited for him to finish reliving his experience.
Did you see the mermaid?
No, he answered.
Who is she?
I whispered.
No one knows. A deserted woman, or just the wind singing around the edges of those cliffs. No one really knows. It just calls people to it. Who?
He looked at me carefully. His eyes were clear and bright, like Ultima's, and there were lines of age already showing.
Last summer, the mermaid took a shepherd. He was a man from Mexico, new here and working for a ranch beyond the hills. He hadn't heard the story about the lakes. He brought his sheep to water there, and he heard the singing. He made it back to town and even swore that he had seen the mermaid. He said it was a woman, resting on the water and singing a lonely song. She was half woman and half fish. He said the song made him want to wade out to the middle of the lake to help her, but his fear had made him run. He told everyone the story, but no one believed him. He ended up getting drunk in town and swearing he would prove his story by going back to the lakes and bringing back the merwoman. He never returned. A week later, the flock was found near the lakes. He had vanished.
Do you think the mermaid took him? I asked.
I don't know, Tony, Siko said and knit his brow. There's a lot of things I don't know. But never go to the hidden lakes alone, Tony. Never. It's not safe.
I nodded that I would honor his warning.
It's so strange, I said. The things that happen. The things that I've seen or heard about.
Yes, he agreed.
These things of the water, the mermaid, the golden carp, they're strange. There's so much water around the town. The river, the creek, the lakes.
Siko leaned back and stared into the bright sky.
This whole land was once covered by a sea, a long time ago.
My name means sea, I pondered aloud.
Hey, that's right, he said. Mares means sea. It means you came from the ocean. Tony Mares, arisen from the sea. My father says our blood is restless like the sea.
That is beautiful, he said. He laughed.
You know, this land belonged to the fish before it belonged to us. I have no doubt about the prophecy of the golden carp. He will come to rule again.
What do you mean? I asked.
What do I mean? Siko asked quizzically. I mean that the golden carp will come to rule again. Didn't Samuel tell you?
No, I shook my head. Well, he told you about the people who killed the carp of the river and were punished by being turned into fish themselves. After that happened, many years later, a new people came to live in this valley, and they were no better than the first inhabitants. In fact, they were worse. They sinned a lot. They sinned against each other, and they sinned against the legends they knew. And so the golden carp sent them a prophecy. He said that the sins of the people would weigh so heavy upon the land that in the end, the whole town would collapse and be swallowed by water. I must have whistled an exclamation and sighed. Tony, Siko said, this whole town is sitting over a deep underground lake. Everybody knows that. Look. He drew on the sand with a stick. Here's the river. The creek flows up here and curves into the river. The hidden lakes complete the other border. See? I nodded. The town was surrounded by water. It was frightening to know that. The whole town, I whispered in amazement. Yup, Siko said. The whole town. The golden carp has warned us that the land cannot take the weight of the sins. The land will finally sink. But you live in town, I exclaimed. He smiled and stood up. The golden carp is my god, Tony. He will rule the new waters. I will be happy to be with my god. It was unbelievable, and yet it made a wild kind of sense. All the pieces fitted. Do the people of the town know? I asked anxiously. They know, he nodded, and they keep on sinning. But it's not fair to those who don't sin, I countered. Tony, Siko said softly, all men sin. I had no answer to that. My own mother had said that losing your innocence and becoming a man was learning to sin. I felt weak and powerless in the knowledge of the impending doom. When will it happen? I asked. No one knows, Siko answered. It could be today, tomorrow, a week, 100 years. But it will happen. What can we do? I asked. I heard my voice tremble. Sin against no one, Siko answered. I walked away from that haven which held the pond and the swimming waters of the golden carp, feeling a great weight in my heart. I was saddened by what I had learned. I had seen beauty, but the beauty had burdened me with responsibility. Siko wanted to fish at the dam, but I was not in the mood for it. I thanked him for letting me see the golden carp, crossed the river, and trudged up the hill homeward. I thought about telling everyone in town to stop their sinning, or drown and die, but they would not believe me. How could I preach to the whole town? I was only a boy. They wouldn't listen. They would say I was crazy, or bewitched by Ultima's magic. I went home and thought about what I had seen and the story Siko told. I went to Ultima and told her the story. She said nothing. She only smiled. It was as if she knew the story and found nothing fantastic or impending in it. I would have told you the story myself, she nodded wisely. But it is better that you hear the legend from someone your own age. Am I to believe the story? I asked. I was worried. Antonio, she said calmly and placed her hand on my shoulder. I cannot tell you what to believe. Your father and your mother can tell you because you are their blood. But I cannot. As you grow into manhood, you must find your own truths. That night, in my dreams, I walked by the shore of a great lake. A bewitching melody filled the air. It was the song of the Merwoman.
I looked into the dark depths of the lake and saw the golden carp, and all around him were the people he had saved. On the bleached shores of the lake, the carcasses of sinners rotted. Then a huge golden moon came down from the heavens and settled on the surface of the calm waters. I looked towards the enchanting light, expecting to see the Virgin of Guadalupe, but in her place I saw my mother. "Mother," I cried, "you are saved. We are all saved." "Yes, my Antonio," she smiled. "We who were baptized in the water of the moon, which was made holy by our Holy Mother, the Church, are saved." "Lies," my father shouted. "Antonio was not baptized in the holy water of the moon, but in the salt water of the sea." I turned and saw him standing on the corpse-strewn shore. I felt a searing pain spread through my body. "Oh, please tell me, which is the water that runs through my veins?" I moaned. "Oh, please tell me, which is the water that washes my burning eyes?" "It is the sweet water of the moon,"